Bonjour and hello and hi and welcome back inside Les Beer Leaguers. The Beer Leaguers are back after a few weeks hiatus. I know we said we'd get to you with our playoff previews, but it turns out we both have full-time jobs and careers and we still don't have a sponsor on the podcast. So, desperate times called for desperate measures, but we're back with our round two of the NHL playoffs preview. Yeah, how's it going,
nothing
Mitch?
Happened in the first round. We don't even have to really worry about it. It's, you know, all the favorites won and we might as well have just started with the second round preview anyway.
I barely even watched.
Yeah, I didn't watch. I didn't really watch.
I'm realizing you don't realize how funny. I'm realizing it's probably funnier with some context. I think I've been glued to the couch from 7 p.m. until at least midnight every single night for the past 2 weeks. It has been every single game must watch hockey. I think it's just hands down. You have to say the best opening round of NHL playoffs of all time.
I think so, just because it's been so unexpected. And I mean, even the games I try not to watch, like I was so tired during that Vegas San Jose game and it was 3-0 or 3-0. Yeah. And I was like, okay, I'm going to bed. And I just like, I saw that they got a 5-minute power play. I was like, ooh. And literally every time I refreshed Twitter or like my TSN app, you're getting that notification that says they scored again. I was like, okay, fine. I'm getting back into this. So, yeah, it's been an insane was an insane first round, and that really sets the stage for what should be a very interesting rest of these playoffs.
Yeah, for sure, man. What? And that was the craziest part too. Is yes, obviously everyone's going to remember that game seven between Vegas and San Jose, and you know what was a controversial penalty call and what ended up being a historic comeback. And everyone's going to remember Boston, Toronto, Game 7, and Toronto choking once again in a Game 7 in Boston. And I'd love to reference a legend of the game, Stat Guy Witt, who mentioned on Spit and Chicklets today that the Leafs have now gone 0-7 against the Bruins in the playoffs since the 60s. It's the longest active losing streak in a playoff encounter between any two teams in the league. So that's incredible.
That is incredible.
But it is incredible, but I mean, it's just, you know, the Leafs get owned by the Bruins, you know, point finale. I think Leafs fans are hoping this year would be different, but clearly wasn't to be. But I mean, aside from those two, I just found every single series and every single game just turned into such incredible must-watch hockey. I mean, it was so exciting. I mean, even, you know, series I didn't think would be that exciting, like the Calgary and Colorado series. Colorado ended up playing incredibly, and Mike Smith, that was one of the best goaltending performances I've seen. That 50-something safe performance in Colorado was just incredible.
Yeah, that was a weird one. If you get goaltending, or like Calgary had the goaltending and still lost in five.
Well, exactly. I mean, I picked Calgary in seven just because everyone assumed that the goaltending would be the weak link, but in the end, the goaltending was the only thing that worked with the Calgary Flames. But that was incredible hockey. Dallas and Nashville ended up being incredibly exciting, lots of back and forth. I just found that there wasn't a night where there wasn't an incredible game happening at any point in time. And like you said, I mean, upsets galore, all of the first seeds get knocked out. The defending Stanley Cup champions get knocked out in double overtime. And yeah, what a second round this is going to be.
Yeah, before we tee up the second round, I did just want to mention, like you said, all four divisional winners are out. And you know, looking ahead to the offseason now for all these teams, it's going to be a crazy offseason because, I mean, so many of these teams have big decisions to make. I know for of them, you just try and keep the core together as much as possible. But I mean, the Leafs have to re-sign Mitch Marner. We know we'll be basically talking about that all summer. And they also have Kapanen, Andreas Janssen, Gardner as well. I mean, you've got the Jets. What do they do now that there's been
Line A and Connor up for
exactly
for contracts?
So they've
right.
got some tough decisions to make. Tampa, obviously, you know, what do you do there after a historic regular season? And then of course, you know, not winning a single playoff game. Nashville's getting older. I mean, there's just so many question marks going into this off season because so many of those teams we expected to go at least deep in the playoffs weren't able to do so. So, while the second round sets up to be incredibly good, the fallout of the first round will be, you know, very interesting and gives us storylines as well.
Yeah, maybe, but I'm going to disagree with you on teams making huge moves. I mean, obviously, you know, the examples you gave, like Toronto and Winnipeg, and even Tampa, because they have to re-sign Braden Point and a few other of their bottom six forwards. I mean, they have no choice but to shuffle some players around just because they need to fit everyone under the cap. But I think the Capitals proved that you don't have to blow everything up and that it's really, really hard to win a round, let alone get all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals. I mean, you don't want your coach like John Cooper did to just say, oh, you know, like it's a tough league, because, you know, you want to hear some fire from your coach and, you know, have him take some of the ownership for the loss. But by the same token, I mean, only one team can win every year. And God, every year the parity just gets better and better, and the skill level just, you know, increases every single year. So as we saw this year, the bottom seeds are not going to go out without a fight, and clearly a very good fight because they all won in the first round. But I think like the Capitals, where they didn't, you know, they kept their core together, and they just, you know, waited until all the pieces around them, and, you know, just everything kind of has to work out for you to win the cup. The pieces have to fit together, no injuries. So I mean, I think it'd be a mistake for a Toronto or a Tampa Bay or a Winnipeg to, you know, panic after a disappointing first round exit and you know, trade one of their core players out. But by the same token, there will definitely be some moves happening this offseason. And oh my God, yeah, like I feel like the Marner toxin is starting next week. You know, I mean, the Gardner execution talks is already rolling out. If his head isn't on a spike in front of the ACC by the end of the month, it'll be lucky. Babcock's already got his name floating around on Twitter, and I'm sure in Toronto bars, you know, people really pissed off with him. And yeah, it'll be interesting, that's for sure. But the Habs signed Nate Thompson. Yeah, baby.
See, there's the headline we're leading with. I wanted to say before we moved on as well, like the Game 7s, like it was so funny how all the Game 7 narratives seemed to play out as well. I mean, you had Big Show, Justin Williams, Mr. Game 7, another big assist. Yep. I can't remember fully what the numbers are on him in Game 7s, but just ridiculous statistics in terms of there. And then
I saw something like 14 points in seven games.
Yeah, that sounds
no, about maybe right. It has to be more. Yeah, has to be more Game 7s than that, but way more than a point per game.
Yeah, which is, you know, obviously incredible. And then you've got kind of the Antichrist, if you want to call him that, in Jake Gardner once again, just having a miserable Game 7 for the Toronto Maple Leafs. So, yeah, it's
that was another one I heard on from Stat Guy Witt. Gardner is the only Maple Leaf who's been on all three Leafs rosters to lose in all three of those Game 7s, and he was on for all three game-winning goals in those Game 7s.
Yeah, and so, pretty direct role in all of them, too.
Feel bad for the kid.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, he's gonna be an interesting one in free agency now, just because, you know, there is, as amazing of a player as he is, there is kind of that stink about him. So I wonder if someone's going to get, I mean, you never get bargains in free agent, but I wonder if someone might be able to snipe him for maybe a little cheaper than he would command if he had, you know, been able to get through his demons. But I feel like we've talked a lot about the round one. Let's move on to round two. I guess we'll start with the Boston
Bruins. The game that's on right now,
yeah.
Baby.
Yeah, the Boston Bruins and the Columbus Blue Jackets. This is such an interesting series because obviously none of us figured, you know, whoever got out of the Leafs Bruins, that was kind of the unpredictable one. And everyone figured, you know, which one of those two would face up against the mighty Tampa Bay Lightning. But obviously you've got the Blue Jackets coming in now. They're coming in with a ridiculous amount of rest. I mean, it feels like it's been a month since they swept the Lightning. And then obviously you've got Boston coming in off of, you know, another big win over the Toronto Maple Leafs. I'll start with you. You know, what do you think of this series?
Before I get into my prediction and what I think of the series, I want to ask about your bracket, because the NHL seems to have taken so much pity on all of us for how badly we all got screwed in the first round by all the upsets that they're letting, I've never heard of this before, letting us make a second bracket after the first round ended. So just some figures. I went 4-for-8 of the teams to make it out of the first round, and only 1 out of 4 conference final pick. And I had Winnipeg beating Boston in the cup finals. Mm. So my bracket got absolutely dummied. How did your bracket do? Do you know offhand? Like, did you make a second one?
I was smart and didn't make a bracket this year. So my bracket is technically perfect.
There you go. Wow. Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. By omission, I guess. So my second bracket, which I've now remade, I have the Columbus Blue Jackets going all the way and winning the Stanley Cup. So that tells you what I think about them as a team. What I think of them in this series, I look at the two teams coming in, and like you said, it's really a case of a team that's very well rested, you know, going through the Tampa Bay Lightning in four games versus a team in Boston that played a real dog of a series against the Maple Leafs going all the way to game seven, and they've only had one night's rest. So a case can be made for, you know, Boston still being in their rhythm while Columbus, you know, might be a little rusty. I'm not sure, you know, how much I buy that, especially given how good the Blue Jackets looked and absolutely dismantling one of the best teams in the history of the NHL. I mean, they were just top to bottom in their roster, unbelievable. But the key to that is I look at the styles of play, and Columbus really wears teams down physically and in their forecheck. And I look at Boston, you know, possibly, you know, playing a lot of hockey against the Maple Leafs and getting worn down by that aggressive and physical style of play from the Blue Jackets. And I think it's just a recipe for success for Columbus. I also look at the goaltending battle. I mean, Tuukka Rask was really, really good against Toronto. Mm-hmm. Take nothing away from that. But Bobrovsky, after he made that save on the 2-on-0 against Kucherov, has just been absolutely lights out. So for those reasons, I like Columbus, and I believe I took them in six games. I like them to steal a game at home against Boston and do the job at home with the cannon.
Yeah, that cannon. At work, we were talking about going to potentially going down to Columbus for a game, but that cannon, that might be a non-starter. Ooh. For me.
Yeah, you don't want to be the guy who absolutely freaks out when it goes off, you
exactly,
know?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, you never want to end up being that guy who gets in the GIFs. But yeah, I mean, it's such an interesting series for all the reasons you mentioned. I probably go Columbus as well, but the one thing I will say about the Boston Bruins is that I don't think they really played up to their standards against the Toronto Maple Leafs. I mean, especially that top line.
No.
You know, there's been so much random criticism of John Tavares because Leafs Nation is literally insane, and we know this. But, you know, that JT line did an unbelievably good job of shutting down Bergeron and Marchand. And, you know, even Pasternak had a pretty bad series, even though he was spent most of the time on, David Krejci's line. Krejci was, you know, was kind of the leader on the team during that series, and they got a lot of points from guys like Nolichari and lower down the lineup. So if they can get that top line going again and you know, get back to what they were in the latter half of the regular season, then all of a sudden this becomes a very different series. Obviously, they're going to be tired out, and there's a lot of old legs as kind of the leaders of that Boston team, and obviously that was a tough series against Toronto, but you know, if they can get the top line going again, then they might even be, you know, at least in terms of what they did in the regular season, they're probably still the favorite to go all the way. So we'll see. It's such an interesting series. Although I still think Columbus, just because they're rested and they probably, like you said, have a style to do it. But you know, it's really is a coin toss at this point because nobody expected a good number of these teams to get through.
So it's funny that you say that you didn't think the top line had a good series. I was actually thinking the opposite way, in that Bergeron, Marchand did a great job of shutting down the Tavares line. I mean, Marner had an incredible game one and game two, and he was one of the stories of the playoffs. And then he just went invisible. I mean, Tavares had a clutch goal in game seven. But other than that, he was pretty quiet. I mean, you're right that Leafs fans are probably nuts to jump on his back and you know, get after him, because I mean, you know, the offense is probably not the reason that the Leafs are at the playoffs right now, but either way, I thought it was impressive how that Bergeron and Marchand duo managed to keep one of the best centers and one of the best wingers in Marner pretty quiet for the duration of a seven game series. So I expect that they'll be equally as good as shutting down one of either the Duchesne Anderson Dzingel line or the Panarin Dubois combo on the top line. So that's a big factor. But that's another thing too, is that Toronto lost a lot of its a big portion of its depth when Nazem Kadri, like the idiot he is, got himself suspended for the rest of the series again. So that was a big part of the Leafs. That was probably their biggest strength, is their depth, especially down the middle, and their third line center, who scored 30 goals last year, sideline himself. So Columbus is very deep, and even if Bergeron manages to shut down one of those lines, they've got three other lines that can kill you. So for all those reasons, I like Columbus.
Kadri's now been suspended for more playoff games the past 2 years than he's actually played.
Oh my God, that's a bad look. Yeah,
that's a really bad look. That's another one of those kind of, I think you're actually right. I didn't fully respond to this earlier, but I think you're right that, nobody's going to really blow up their core. They'd be silly to do that among these main teams, because like you said, if you can keep your core together, usually eventually it might work out. But I think moves like that, questions like whether Nazem Kadri comes back or what you do with him are more the kind of questions that need to be answered this offseason. And Toronto's one of those places, as we've said, to kind of look out for.
Yeah, man, for sure. So the other reason I like Columbus going to the Cup Final, and I guess this is like a nice little transition to the next series, is I like the path. I like the path they take going to the Cup Final. I think Toronto's, Boston is maybe a little fatigued after playing a lot of hockey. And then assuming Columbus can get out of this series, they'll face the winner of Carolina and the New York Islanders. Both are teams that I don't think anybody would have expected to be in the second round, having gone through Pittsburgh and Washington. And both are teams, I think, that maybe lack the star power to really get through the dog days of the playoffs. And I guess we'll talk about the series now. Carolina double overtime win against the defending Cup champions. What a storyline that was for the jerks from Carolina, and the New York Islanders. 4-game sweep of the Pittsburgh Penguins. Sidney Crosby and Geno Malkin kept pretty quiet for the whole series. And just, another example of, a team going from dead last in the league to goals allowed to now the least amount of goals allowed first overall in terms of their defensive record. And Trotz, again, is doing it in the playoffs. They shut down the Penguins in 4 games. And it'll be interesting to see what they do against the Hurricanes, who are one of the best possession teams in the league, and they have been over the last few years. Are just notorious for burying teams on the shot clock. So what do you think is going to play out?
Yeah, this is a great series. I agree with your path comment. I think for me, whoever wins the Columbus Boston series ends up in the Cup Final, just because, like you said, I think these are two hockey clubs in the other side of the bracket that have probably overachieved to get to this point. Not that Columbus hasn't, but in kind of a different way. Robin Leonard, man, I mean, such an incredible story this year.
It's crazy.
Vezina Trophy nominee. If you haven't seen the clip of him explaining, his mental health struggles and his struggles with bipolar and addiction, I mean, it's one of the most honest clips I've ever seen of an athlete talking about these kind of struggles. He really goes through it and breaks it down and makes it clear that these are things that he's dealing with and a lot of people are dealing with, and that you can overcome. And it's an unbelievably powerful story, and he's been so good for them all year, including the playoffs as well. So that's awesome there. But speaking of feel good stories, I mean, this Carolina Hurricanes team, like you said, for so many years they've been kind of possession darlings and a team that could get all kinds of shot attempts but didn't necessarily have the top-end offensive talent to get the job done. But this is a team that it feels like this is the start of something. Like, they could really be going places. I mean, that back end alone is unbelievably good.
Stacked.
I mean, we've seen Jacob Slavin and Brett Pesce really have a breakout here. I mean, 9 points for Jacob Slavin in that first round series, second most all time for a defenseman in a series. Absolutely huge for him. Dougie Hamilton really seems like he's finally found his spot. I think it's good that he's out of the spotlight a little bit. He's kind of in a market where he can
score. 1-1 Columbus.
There you go.
Sorry, had to do it, but I've got Columbus on the split screen. 12 minutes
fair enough.
Left.
Who scored?
Riley Nash, the former Bruin.
There you go. Another. It seems like there's so many of those too. Like everything's got like a sweet storyline in these playoffs. But at any rate, Dougie Hamilton's really had a great playoff so far, and seems like an awesome fit there. And I mean, they have so many guys coming on the way too. I mean, if you're a guy like Adam Fox, who we know now is gonna go to college for his fourth year and probably not sign with the Carolina Hurricanes, you can understand why, because they've got Jake Bean coming up. They've got Hayden Fleury as well on the farm team. Like, they have so much talent on the back end. Mrazek was really good for them, and they've been finally getting a save. They've got Teravainen, Aho. Obviously, Svechnikov missed a lot of these series after getting filled in by Ovechkin, but yeah, I mean, there's just a lot of young talent here, and it seems like this is a team that, this won't be the last time we see them go this far in the playoffs. And just one more stat before I finish this rant: the Carolina Hurricanes never lost a second round series.
I kept it in so much, but the Brad man just scored. It's 2-1 Columbus. Let's go, Columbus!
Wow.
I can't believe it. Two goals in about a minute.
Man, these playoffs.
They're nuts. Oh, it was a weird goal. It was like a fucky deflection. Panarin took the shot and in off Dubois. Wow. Well, there you go. Another quick lead change. Okay, back to Carolina and New York Islanders. The one thing you touched on briefly, but I really circle in the series, is the goaltending. Leonard and Greiss, but I mean it'll be Leonard unless he royally fucks up, has been one of the best goalies consistently throughout the whole year. I mean, they allowed the least amount of goals, that duo, and Leonard has just been rock solid. Whereas Peter Mrazek, I'm not comfortable with him as a goalie in net. I mean, he was given the timely saves in the first round in Carolina, but he really struggled on the road in Washington. He gave up, I just saw the stats, it was between 2 and 3 goals a game in the first period in Washington. He only gave up, I believe, it was 2. It was 2 again in Game 7. They were down 2-0. So I look at that as a really as a question mark on the Hurricanes team. Like you said, it's good that they're finally getting a save mixed in every now and again, but you need to have stellar goaltending if you're going to get through 4 rounds in the NHL playoffs. And I can't see the Hurricanes going into Long Island giving up 2-3 goals a game in the first period and being able to come back against a team that is just so well disciplined in New York, and with a goalie that's been very, very strong. So I look at that as a real like selling point on why the Islanders are going to advance. When I look at how they're playing and how Leonard's playing, it reminds me of Tim Thomas on the Bruins. I mean, Leonard doesn't do anything spectacular. He doesn't seem like the most athletic guy. Like he just kind of like this big lug who's in the net. He doesn't look like he's going to be able to make the save, but he's just always in position to make the first save. And if ever there's a rebound, that defense, it's such a team defense where they box you out of the out of the center of the ice, and it's almost impossible to get a good second chance. So I look at the goaltending as the big factor in this series, and the Islanders having the home ice advantage kind of tipping the scales in their favor. But I should also note that I only went 8 for 16, or I guess 4 for 8 in the first round. So I mean, like, you're basically, you're better off with a coin toss than you are, listening to us and picking your second bracket. But the goaltending matchup and the home ice advantage leads me to believe that the Islanders will win. I have them in 7 games.
It is a different type of a home ice advantage, though, because if I'm correct, they'll be in Brooklyn, right? Not Nassau.
Brooklyn, right?
Which does take a good amount of the sting. I mean, Nassau was one of the best
environments
this year, and Brooklyn's one of the worst places. I mean, even just if you're talking about ice quality, I mean, the players on both teams have been very vehement about the fact that they hate playing there, and it's like just an awful place to play NHL games. So, who knows if that makes a big difference, but I think it's definitely worth mentioning in terms of at least eating into that home ice advantage a little bit.
Yeah, maybe, but I think the fans will still be going nuts. I mean, Islanders fans are such crazy nutbags that I have no doubt that they're going to be absolutely fired up for the second round. I mean, hell, when was the last time given the fact that they missed the playoffs for a number of years in a row, and B, the whole Tavares chip on their shoulder thing this year has just led to like a really kind of special season for the Islanders. So I have no doubt that, you know, no matter where the frickin' arena is, they're going to show up in hordes and be absolutely like crippled drunk.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Wait, did you say who you're picking this series?
I'm going to go Carolina. I really like this Carolina team. But again, it's going to be close.
It's a possession. You like the Corsi. You love the possession numbers on the team.
Maybe. But I also, like I said, really like that back end. Really think that's going to be solid for shutting down this this Islanders team. And I like how they've been playing for the past. They're one of the hottest teams going into the playoffs, and they've continued that with, you know, beating for me probably the second best team in the East, at least what I would have considered to be going into the playoffs this year.
Yeah. I mean, them and Columbus, hey, two of the hotter teams coming into the playoffs, and both are still alive. So if that holds up, that would be a pretty cool conference final, Columbus and Carolina. Mm-hmm. All right, let's shift over to the Stars and the Blues. Again, I picked the Stars, but my cup pick of the Winnipeg Jets absolutely backfired on me. Just a little backstory. I mean, I really like the Jets to win the cup this year, but I also I was a little biased in my pick. The Hockey News, where we both interned, had picked the Winnipeg Jets on one of their future wash issues. I believe it was in 2015. They picked them as the 2019 Stanley Cup champions, yeah, just because of the like the horde of high-end prospects they had coming in, and they stuck with their pick this year. And I really like the juju going in, that all their players are mature. They learned from their experience last year, making to the conference final and losing to the Golden mm-hmm. Knights. But it wasn't to be, man. The other reason I picked them is I really thought Jordan Binnington would crack. I mean, you know, goaltending is such a major part of a team's success in the playoffs, and even though Binnington was great down the stretch in the regular season, I really thought that, you know, having never played a playoff game, that he would really, you know, crumble under the pressure, especially, you know, that offense of the Winnipeg Jets. Mm-hmm. But man, he was awesome. He was so good. You got to give respect to a goalie when he has a kind of performance like that. And other than that 6-goal game, he was almost unbeatable. And there were a few drives late in the game where the Jets were buzzing, and you know, he just stood tall and made the timely save. So It's going to be a hell of a series between two of the hottest goalies in the league, Binnington and Ben Bishop. Who do you like between those two
teams? Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I mean, if you're a goaltending fan, this is the best series to watch, because you have a guy in Binnington who's riding the hot hand, and a guy in Bishop who's been fantastic this year and was obviously great again in that first round series. And I mean, for Winnipeg, you look at Hellebuck a little bit. I mean, he wasn't bad, but he was good,
but not good enough.
He went back to being very average this year. I mean, 9-13 in the playoffs and the regular season. That's about what you would consider an average NHL starter, which, you know,
yeah,
maybe you can win with that, but it's pretty rare. I mean, I'm thinking of Antti Niemi as the only example of like an average NHL goalie who's taken a team to a cup in recent years. You usually have to have someone who's at least above average. So, we've obviously seen Binnington and Bishop be very good in these playoffs, but I think I have to go with St. Louis here. I mean, I just think they're deeper. We've talked all year about the Dallas Stars' struggles offensively. And, you know, obviously that top line was amazing again. Jamie Benn, Tyler Seguin. They split them up for good, you know, portions of this playoff, similar to what Boston did, putting Pasternak on the second line just so they could have more than one line going. And it seemed to work for them fairly well. Obviously, they won the series. But I just don't think they have enough offensive depth to compete with a Blues team who has so many good players and you know, have finally started figuring it out there. I really like the Blues out of the West, to be honest. I think that's my team that I have in the Cup final out of the Western Conference, is the St. Louis Blues. They've just they've been so good for an extended period in the second half of the season, and with their path kind of cleared a little bit here now, I like them to go potentially all the way.
Yeah, I mean, great point about the path being cleared. That's kind of has to happen for, you know, like I said before, so many things have to go just right for a team to make the cup final. That's definitely one of them. I like St. Louis for Binnington. If he can keep up his play, you know, there's no one they can't beat. And I like them for their special teams, man. You know, that's another important part of a playoff run. And the Blues have a good blue line and some studs up front that run a really good power play. But that O'Reilly, man, that O'Reilly is so freaking good. He's an absolute assassin on the power play. He can play penalty kill. He's clutch. He came up with big goals. I mean, the guy just seems to be everywhere. What a pickup for St. Louis he's been. So I like you said, while Dallas has the big guys up front, I think they also played a very vulnerable Nashville team that just didn't look like themselves all year. They had the worst power play in the league that really didn't come through at all in the playoffs in some pretty big moments. So for those reasons, I like St. Louis to go through. And I, like you, have them going through the cup final as well, losing to Columbus. But it's kind of boring. We're agreeing a little too much here. I don't know. I wish there was a little more animosity.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we're all just so, like, I don't know, nobody believes in their picks enough at this point to to push very hard on an opinion. But yeah, this the final series that we haven't talked about so far is another very interesting one, in the sense that this is a San Jose team that I don't think we would have been surprised before the season when they've, you know, in the fact that they've gotten this far. This is one of the teams that was a favorite before the season, but obviously they've struggled a little bit during the year to get to this point, versus an Avalanche team who've been probably another one of the big surprises of the playoffs, and the way they were able to dominate the Calgary Flames and eliminate them, another team with a lot of talent, but not necessarily the, you know, what we thought was the depth going forward for them. But they're kind of, I mean, to an even better extent, they're the Carolina Hurricanes of the Western Conference, in the sense that there's so much future there. I mean, we've seen Makar come in and just dominate right away in his first game in the NHL, and they have a lot of guys coming up. Obviously, they have a fourth-round pick this year, regardless of what happens. So, or sorry, a fourth overall pick this year, regardless of what happens. So that's going to be... You know, that's a series that before the year it would have seemed very easy to pick, and it would be the Sharks going through. But now, it's a much more of a toss up, I think.
So for me, the biggest story or the biggest surprise of the first round were the Islanders sweeping the Penguins. I just never saw that coming. I thought they were pretty, you know, disciplined, but that, you know, skill would tell and that they would win. Second, obviously, I mean, I wasn't as surprised that Columbus knocked off Tampa.
You did
but,
say.
I mean,
you did
given,
say that you thought. I'll give you credit on here. You did pick Columbus.
Yeah, I'd pick Columbus coming the first round. I mean, maybe it was more of an upset pick than anything. But I really think that Tampa would choke after the season. But, man, I had never expected Colorado to look as good as they did. I mean, part of it was how bad Calgary looked. I mean, yeah. Their top line was not going at
James
all.
Neal.
I think they combined for
Yikes.
5 points. James Neal scratched in the last game. Yeah, he just had a horrible season that ended off with, you know, kind of an exclamation point there. Just nothing seemed to work for the Flames except their goalie, ironically, which everyone thought was their weak point. But you got to give credit to the Avalanche. Grubauer, despite struggling in his first two games against Columbus last year for the Capitals, was unbelievable throughout the series. He made the timely saves when he needed to. The big boys, McKinnon, Rantanen, McKinnon, Rantanen, and Landeskog were money coming up with the big goals when they needed to. Well, man, it's like a three-headed monster. You might as well combine their names. McKinnon, I think, has made a case for himself on the national stage when everyone's watching that he deserves to be in the conversation with McDavid and Crosby as the most dynamic players in the league. It's just incredible to watch him shift into gear. That overtime goal where he crossed the blue line and he just, you know, snapped that wrist shot in what seemed like a millisecond was just it was breathtaking. It was really a joy to watch. The depth came through with the Avalanche. And the blue line sneaky good. And even with Sam Girard, who's an important piece for the Avalanche came came out of the series with injury, Cale Makar stepped in, and oh my God, he looks like a seasoned vet. The kid's like 20 years old and never played a NHL game in his life, inserted it into a playoff series against the top seed in the West, who everyone expected to make a run to the Stanley Cup playoffs, and this kid's playing, what, like 18 minutes a night, second power play unit. He's skating out of his zone and snapping breakout passes like he's freaking Mark Giordano. It was incredible. It was incredible to see. That kid is going to be a stud. There's no question. They reminded me of Charlie McAvoy in that way. Just, you know, absolute stud who just does not look phased at all by the stage.
Yeah, I'll talk a bit to the Sharks then, since you did a pretty good job of teeing up the Avalanche there.
I think that that kind of tells you who I'm picking in this series.
Fair enough. The one thing I'll give the Sharks, and this is it's certainly a dumb thing to key in on, but it does feel like the case is that there seems to be a bit of destiny with the Sharks team, in the sense that the way they were able to beat the Vegas Golden Knights, we talked off the top about the ridiculous third period of the Game 7, and even the way that Hurdle scored that. Or I think it was Couture actually scored that overtime goal shorthanded in the game before. I mean,
no, it was Hurdle.
It was Hurdle. Okay, yeah. Both of them have had very good playoffs, by the way, just to key in on those players. But just the way they were able to survive that series when it really seemed like they were dead. When teams start to do that a couple times, I take notice, because as much as it's about a number of different things, it's also about getting good bounces at the right time, and I don't think there's much better bounce than getting a 5-minute power play in a third period and scoring four goals on it. I mean, it doesn't get better than that. But obviously the one concern when it comes back to the San Jose Sharks has been the same thing all year. Marty Jones is not good. Even in that Game 7, he was atrocious, and they won despite him. He had the one game.
No. Give him credit. He had that, 50-save performance, the one 50-save game, or whatever it was, in Game 6 in Vegas.
Yeah, obviously he kept them alive there, but I really do think they mostly won this series despite Marty Jones. So if somehow he can turn it around, then honestly, if he becomes at least an average goalie again, then maybe they're even a cup favorite. But at the moment, I just think the Avalanche might be the hotter team, and they just look super vulnerable.
So to back up that claim with some stats, San Jose gave up the second most goals against of any team, goals against per game at 3.57. Mm-hmm. You know who it's so crazy. Tampa Bay gave up the most goals against per game, 4.75.
Yeah, that's insane.
It's mind-boggling, but with their defense and Vasilevskiy in that. But yeah.
Yeah, and a 904
San Jose gave up the second most.
A 904 for Martin Jones, which is actually, if you can believe it, a nice 8-point improvement
than his season
from his
save percentage.
Season.
Yeah, crazy. Yeah, so the destiny's a good point, and maybe the hockey gods want Jumbo Joe to finally win his cup.
Great.
But I think they're too beat up. I think they're too beat up after that Vegas series. Marty Jones is one of the reasons why they...
Pavelski, I mean, we know for sure he's going to miss game one.
Pavelski's a big contributor, and Erik Karlsson, everybody knows he's playing injured.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, maybe he's playing injured. There is no question he has a lower body injury. He's not skating like himself. And there's definitely other guys in that roster who are banged up too. Because that Vegas team is nasty, and that was a nasty 7-game series.
I think Gord Miller...
With the last two games going
to overtime. I think
Gord
Miller on Karlsson said it's multiple injuries. Like, he's pretty sure that he's going to have a bunch of different things to figure out once the offseason comes around.
Yeah, so I, as much as I would love San Jose to complete their destiny and watch whatever the hell Joe Thornton would do when he won the Stanley Cup, which would probably be very R-rated considering what he would do if Hurdle scored four, or if he scored four goals.
Yeah.
But I can't look past the goaltending and all the injuries that they've racked up after playing the Golden Knights, and given how strong Grubauer looked and how strong their defense looked, Colorado, and how well they were scoring against a really strong goaltender in Mike Smith, I got to give the edge to the Avalanche. And I mean, given how the first round went, there's just no predicting what's going to happen. And I mean, the playoffs are full of surprises in general, let alone, oh my God, the Bruins just hit the post with 4 minutes left. Yeah, the playoffs are full of surprises. No, they scored. Oh my God, 2-2, Charlie Coyle. There you go. It looked like it was so quick in and out. It looked like it hit the post, but no, 2-2 with 4.5 left. Well, there you go. The playoffs are so unpredictable that you really can't say with absolute certainty what's going to happen. But I like Colorado as my most confident pick just because of the goaltending and all the injuries on San Jose that I just really can't see San Jose persevering through a 7-game series.
One thing I did want to say before we wrap up here is as we head into this second round, I mean, surprisingly, actually, I mean, I guess it was the only game and it was a game 7, but Carolina and Washington, they broke the ratings record in the U.S. for highest rated first round game of all time for that game 7.
Come on.
Yeah, it beat the previous record, which I believe was one of the Leafs Bruins game 7s. It might have been last year.
That's what I would have assumed.
Yeah, it might have been last year. It might have been the other one, but I guess it was an all-American matchup, and it was the lone thing going on, so it got incredible ratings on U.S. TV. But I think the NHL better stake their claim to that one, because I don't think it gets that great going forward. I mean, you've got Columbus, Dallas, Carolina, the New York Islanders, even San Jose. I mean, if you're the NHL at this point, you are cheering so hard for a Boston-St. Louis final.
Boston, I guess, yeah.
Because otherwise,
yeah, I guess.
Your numbers are going to be pretty bad, especially heading into a lockout time coming up here.
Potentially.
Yeah, contract negotiations. So you're hoping for another Bobby Orr style situation where Boston beats St. Louis and Zdeno Chara goes like flying after scoring the overtime goal. That's what the NHL's dream must be right now. But otherwise, it's going to be interesting.
I guess so. Do you think so? I mean, there's a case to be made for that, but there's also a case to be made for, like a non-traditional hockey market winning a cup. I mean, on the one hand, Carolina won one, and then they went through like a despondent 10 years and kind of lost all their fans again. But I mean, they are trying to grow the game, and it's not like Boston needs to win a cup to attract any more fans. So maybe it would be, they might take a slight hit in the TV ratings if it was like Carolina in the cup final or Columbus or the Islanders or something. But you could also make the case that if a Dallas made all the way to the cup final,
they build
a lot of roots in the Dallas community, and that, maybe the game would be better forward in the long run.
That's a good point. Yeah. Maybe it's just Columbus that they don't want to advance.
Yeah. Well, and even then, I like the point that if Columbus goes all the way and wins the cup, we'll see a lot more exciting trades going forward, because everyone thought that Kika Leinen was a nut job making all those trades. What the hell? That's not the hockey way. I can't believe he gambled everything. Yeah. And they just took out the best team in the NHL history.
That's fair.
Well, second best, but I think given the lockout constraints, the best team ever. So, I mean, if Columbus goes away and wins the cup, we might see a lot more exciting trade deadlines again, because GMs will be incentivized, to load up and get their team in the playoffs, because clearly anything can happen.
Yeah, that's a great point. And, I mean, yeah, that would – any happenstance that encourages more wild trades, I am all for.
Yeah, exactly. We're all for it. And that's one of the lamest parts about hockey, is that it's so conservative. I mean, the players are conservative in their off-ice conduct. They don't want to, kind of break away from the hockey culture of just being, vanilla and boring. Mm-hmm. And same with the GMs. They don't like making trades because they're scared of one not working out, and they just play it safe. But exactly. I mean, if the NHL could learn one thing from the other North American pro leagues, it's probably that. And how to apologize for a bad ref call, because I don't want to get into it too much, because there's been tons of chatter about that penalty call against the Knights in game 7, but the NHL's response to it was pretty awful, because I mean, it was universally agreed that it should not have been a 5-minute major. I mean, it was a cross check to the chest, and they saw the result of which happened to be Pavelski's head hitting the ice, not who was it again that hit him? Cody Eakin. Cody Eakin. Yeah, so it wasn't Eakin who caused the injuries, his head hitting the ice. It was an unfortunate play, but shouldn't have been a 5-minute major. But the NHL hasn't apologized. All that's happened is the off-ice referee tweeted out saying that
they did,
explaining why the call on the ice was made. They apologized
to the Vegas Golden Knights directly, apparently.
Okay. Okay.
So it's at least a little better there, yeah.
Pierre Maguire was on Melnick in the afternoon the day after the game on, I guess it was Monday. Mm-hmm. And he said that this should be at the same type of moment as that brutal pass interference call in the NFL. Between the Saints and is it Seahawks? I forget who the Saints definitely were playing, but that Seahawks, awful. But yeah. No, it wasn't the Seahawks. So it was whoever the Saints were playing in the championship game this past season. But the call was so bad that it just clearly proved that the rule had to be rewritten. And I think this call proved that in the playoffs you need to review a 5-minute major penalty, because it just too much is at stake for the call to be gotten wrong in any game, let alone in Game 7. So, I mean, it ended up being one of the most incredibly exciting finishes probably in the history of the first round and of Game 7s. But you don't want a team to go down like that. And I hope this will be a learning moment for the NHL where they change the rules. And also hopefully deal with the PR a bit better, because you know, everyone's pissed off at the NHL. And, you know, the least they could do is offer, you know, an honest and heartfelt, you know, apology and say, you know, we'll work to improve this. Not, you know, for 2 days, you know, kind of dart around it, and that the on-ice referee just kind of confirming the call and not saying anything. I mean, it sucks, but, you know, you got to deal with what happened and move on.
I don't know. At the same time, with something like this, like, I do think there does need to be we do need to give them a couple days to do an internal review and make sure that they got the call right. I mean, you know, you want to talk these things can't happen right away. You want to make sure, you know, the referee association is consulted. Everyone believes that it truly was the wrong call, and the proper, you know, the proper processes are put into place. So I don't know if I'm that against it, but I'm 100% in agreement that major penalties should be reviewable in the Stanley Cup playoffs. I think they're just too important, and it's not like the offside reviews or all these other reviews that we hate so much because they take so much time and are so annoying. Like, this is one.
They would have taken a minute and seen that there was a wrong call and given maybe 2 minutes.
Exactly. And how many 5-minute majors do we see? Like, not really that many. It's not like we'd be seeing this, you know, this probably like happens one in every like 15 games, maybe. So like once a round or so. So it's really not going to cause the other issues that any other reviews have. So yeah, 100% agree. I think that's the way forward for the NHL. And I know Vegas, the Vegas Golden Knights owner, has already gone on records, Bill Foley, saying that he will be pushing for this at the next owners meeting. And I'd imagine he'll get some, you know, some other teams considering it as well.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, did you want to end off with a healthy scratch? Did you prepare one for this epi?
I don't really have a healthy scratch, no. I think this is everything's been going pretty well in the NHL recently for me.
Oh, come on. Dude, we've been off for a few weeks. That's been so much time for me to build up a hatred for so many
That's
things.
That's true. I'll clear the runway for you, and maybe I'll think of one.
Oh, I have so many things that are healthy scratches. No. So many things. Just today, healthy scratch goes to a coworker who spent 5 minutes cleaning a fork while I had peanut buttered my toast and was waiting to clean my knife so I could go back to my desk and eat my delicious cinnamon raisin peanut butter toast. And a coworker talking to someone else, just yammering away, scrubbing the fork, 3 minutes, just talking, not even looking at the fork, finally looked back at the fork.
Got the silver polish out. With just...
Dude took the fingernail and started scraping the fork with the fingernail. Come on, how long does it take to clean a fork? So finally I just went back to my desk and left my knife at the kitchen to clean up after the fact. You know, just, you know, terrible kitchen office at kitchen etiquette. It's like when someone stands on the left side of the escalator, you know. It's just, come on, like, get with society. You know the rules here. Like, you've been doing this long enough. You should know that. So that's a healthy scratch. Healthy scratch to the entire city of Kitchener. I don't think we talked about this the last episode, but I and a couple other buddies from school do a March Madness bracket every year, and we decided the prize this year would be the winner hosted like a boys weekend. And of course you won from freaking Kitchener.
Michigan,
so instead
State,
of going
baby.
To,
let's go.
Instead of coming to Montreal or, you know, going to Toronto, I'd even rather go to Hamilton, but no, we have to go to the frickin' Apple Crisp Festival like in downtown Kitchener. So that's great.
Oh, no. It'll be a great time. And yeah, you'll get to appreciate the finer parts of Kitchener, Ontario.
Oh God, like the Apple Crispy Boys jubilee every Canada Day.
We'll go to the farmer's market. Burn down again.
I don't like fires, but I can't lie. I love farmers markets. So I mean, you know, I'm not mad about that one. So you know, I give a first star to farmers markets, but a healthy scratch to farmers markets that are burning down.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I feel like I've had a bunch of healthy scratches just kind of saved up, but no, the fork really pissed me off today. I don't know. I guess that's it. I guess that's it for healthy scratches. I'm sure as soon as we end the pod, I'm going to think of like 18 other things that have pissed me off over the last couple of weeks. But no, that's it for now.
Yeah, we'll maybe end it on a bit of a positive note for the people. And yeah, just say the podcast is back. We'll hopefully have the audio quality a little bit better. We've kind of figured things out a little bit, and we should have some exciting guests coming up here as well as we head into the deeper rounds of the playoffs here. And like we said, an off season that we're pretty excited for, as well as, you know, there's just going to be so many teams trying to figure out what the heck happened these past couple weeks.
The Leafs kind of played like our audio quality.
Whoa.
In game 7.
Nice. Wow, we went a whole podcast without chirping the Leafs, and we did it at the very end.